scores for 18-year-old Benjamin Grosvenor as he was when he gave that recital at LSO St Luke's in October 2010. And there he was playing Chopin's Scherzo No. 2 in B-flat minor. Well, that completes today's lunchtime concert here on Radio 3. Tomorrow we're live at the Wigmore Hall for a programme given by the Spanish Cuarteto Casals, the Barcelona-based group. They're playing quartets by Haydn, George Kurtag and Bartok. That's at the same time tomorrow on Radio 3, just after the 1 o'clock news.
Two Shostakovich symphonies on two consecutive nights in Radio 3 live in concert. It was smuggled out of war-torn Leningrad on microfilm. On Thursday night, the 7th symphony, played by the Halle Orchestra and Mark Elder. And on Friday, the symphony that followed it, a work in which the notes look beyond their wartime surroundings, Shostakovich's 8th Symphony, with the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and Thomas Zondekar. Thursday and Friday night Shostakovich in Radio 3 live in concert, live on Radio 3 from 7:30.
Well, from this weekend onwards, you can also find a live concert on Sunday evenings on BBC Radio 3, and Mark Elder and the Halle Orchestra, who Andrew just mentioned there, are giving tonight's live concert. Alison Balsam plays Haydn's Trumpet Concerto, and the programme ends with Elgar's Enigma Variations. Live from the Bridgewater Hall in Manchester, Radio 3 live in concert tonight at 7:30. And as I mentioned earlier, that's all part of a new look to Sundays on BBC Radio 3. Our choral evensong is now at 3 o'clock. The choir, presented by Mary King, is at 4 o'clock. We have words and music for you at 5:30. And this week's Sunday feature visits Copenhagen in search of the philosopher Søren Kierkegaard. And that's at 6:45 this evening. It's now a minute after 2 o'clock on BBC Radio 3. That's the regular time for the Early Music Show. And in this week's programme, Catherine Bott looks at an unfamiliar side to a familiar composer.
Perhaps one of the best-known keyboard pieces of the 18th century by one of the finest players of his day, Domenico Scarlatti. As you might guess from his name, Scarlatti was Italian, but a great deal of his music has an Iberian tinge. He spent much of his career serving the Spanish and Portuguese royal families and was music teacher to Princess Maria Barbara, who later became Queen of Spain. It's said that Scarlatti and Handel once duelled in a keyboard competition, and although Handel was thought to be the most deft on the organ, Scarlatti triumphed on the harpsichord. Whatever the truth of that story, his 555 sonatas for that instrument are generally reckoned to be his most significant contribution to music. But given that he was an Italian whose father was one of the most important figures in both Neapolitan and Roman opera, vocal music was never far from Scarlatti's thoughts, so today's Early Music Show focuses on some of his vocal music for the stage and for the church.
Jesus.
Domenico Scarlatti's motet Cibavit Nos Dominus, The Lord Fed Us with the Finest Wheat Flour, sung by the Immortal Bach Ensemble, conducted by Morten Schulte-Jensen. It's not known exactly when that motet was written, but it's likely to have been when Scarlatti was still living and working in Rome, and under the rather strict control of his father, Alessandro, who exercised a quite intolerable degree of interference in Domenico's life and music. He did, though, engineer a job for his son at the Basilica Giulia in Rome, which led quickly to Domenico's rise to the position of maestro di cappella. Most of his sacred compositions seem to come from this period, 1713 to 1719, and before he made his escape from Rome and from his overbearing father. We've already heard some of Scarlatti's music for massed voices. This next piece is a solo voice setting of the Salve Regina text. Hail, Holy Queen, Mother of Mercy, our life, our sweetness and our hope.
Thank you.
James Bowman was the soloist with the King's Consort, directed by Robert King, in Domenico Scarlatti's Salve Regina. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and this programme is also available as a download via the Radio 3 website. As I've already mentioned, Domenico Scarlatti's early life was filled with the operas and staged oratorios of his father, Alessandro, and the paternal style must have seeped into his writing by osmosis. We know he wrote several theatrical pieces himself in his early career. When he first arrived in Rome in 1709, his first job was with the exiled Polish Queen Marie Kazimierz, for whom he wrote a number of operas for her private theatre. Sadly, almost everything he wrote for the stage is now lost. His first, and as far as we know, only venture into comedy, a musical farce called La Dirindina, comes from the Roman carnival season of 1715. However, the performance was banned at the last moment. The censor even went as far as halting the printing of the libretto, Girolamo Gigli's text being considered altogether too bold, pointed, and forensically critical of the Roman musical establishment. The audience disliked the prohibition so much that they repeatedly showed their disapproval in the theatre, shouting, "Give us Licione! Give us Dirindina!" Gigli decided to take matters into his own hands, and with the support of numerous individuals and at great expense to himself, he printed 500 copies of the libretto and made them available in Rome. The scandal was enough to set other librettists and composers scuttling for their pens to create countless comic operas about music and musicians, which would soon enjoy success in Italian opera houses. The opening action of La Dirindina takes place in a room with a harpsichord and music books. Don Carissimo, a composer and teacher of the young singer Dirindina, seems more interested in her physical charms than in her less than scintillating vocal artistry.
Signora Dirindina, così sempre in fin guarda, al cimbalo venite ogni mattina.
Or via! Che più si tarda, cominciamo!
A voi nonna, aprite bella bocca, ma spurgatevi prima!
Ah, sputo!
Oh, buono, badate bene al tuono!
Di note e non d'affetti.
I'm afraid it's a no from me. But respect to Marina Bartoli, as did Indina, for that recitative. It's harder than people think to sing badly by design. She was joined by Giulio Mastrotaro as her teacher, Don Carissimo, the clue's in the name, and L'Arte dell'Arco, directed by Federica Guglielmo, in a scene from Domenico Scarlatti's entertainment La Dirindina, creating a stir in Rome back in 1715. 5 years later, Scarlatti was making a good impression on King João V of Portugal. Monarch and composer probably got to know each other during one of the king's regular visits to Rome. Scarlatti was offered a terrific salary and travel allowances with leave to return to Italy once a year if he'd agree to work at the royal court in Lisbon. He said yes. One of his first commissions there was to write a serenata for the birthday of Queen Maria Anna Josefa. And the result was La Contesa delle Stagioni, The Dispute of the Seasons. It's scored for 4 solo singers, chorus and orchestra, and is a musical excuse for a celebration. Here's the plot, as far as it goes. Father Time, who doesn't appear as a character, announces a contest between the seasons to establish which of them is the most important. Each has to plead its case, claiming the merits and the longest-lasting works which distinguish it. One after another, each claimant emphasises its superiority in an alternation of arias and recitatives until Autumn ends the dispute by claiming the unbeatable merit of having been the season in which the Queen was born.
Seasonal fun in the contest for royal approval. Il Concerto Ecclesiastico, conducted by Luca Franco Ferrari, in music from Domenico Scarlatti's La Contesa delle Stagioni. Once Scarlatti had settled into life at the royal court in Lisbon, part of his job, as we've already heard, was to coach the Infanta, Princess, Maria Barbara, in the ways of the keyboard. He was also required to compose celebratory music for royal occasions, and the next piece we're going to hear is an eight-voice Te Deum for one of those events. The Gazzetta de Lisboa, on New Year's Day 1722, recalls, "On the last day of the year 1721, there was sung in the church of San Rocco in this city, in celebration of thanks for all the benefits accorded by God our Lord during the year to this realm and its inhabitants, the hymn Te Deum Laudamus, elegantly composed to music and distributed among various choirs of musicians by the famous Domingos Scarlatti. The entire church was magnificently decorated and filled with an infinite number of lights, and the musicians arranged in triangular tribunes, especially constructed and adorned with rich hatchments, all at the order and expense of the Lord Patriarch. All the nobility of the court was present, and the concourse of the people was innumerable." The Te Deum was probably performed again in 1729 at the double wedding of Scarlatti's pupil, Infanta Maria Barbara, to the Spanish Crown Prince Fernando, and the Spanish Infanta Maria Victoria to Portugal's Prince Don José.
Thank you.
Domenico Scarlatti's Te Deum Laudamus, sung by Ensemble William Byrd, conducted by Graham O'Reilly. Today, Scarlatti's most famous and often performed vocal piece is undoubtedly his Stabat Mater for 10 voices with continuo. Again, it's impossible to date the composition, but most scholars seem to think that the resources available to Scarlatti in Venice or Rome seem to point to the period before he left Italy in 1720. I see that Grove's dictionary is rather dismissive of Scarlatti's output in these Italian years, saying that the level does not rise above that of professional competence. But that seems harsh to me. See what you think as we end today's programme with some of the work's closing movements in a recording by Concerto Italiano, directed by Rinaldo Alessandrini.
Oh,
The end of Domenico Scarlatti's Stabat Mater. Rinaldo Alessandrini was conducting his ensemble Concerto Italiano. And that brings to an end the Early Music Show, which today was presented by Catherine Bott and produced in Salford by Les Pratt. On next week's programme, Lucy Skeeping will be looking at music from the city of Prague, with pieces by Josef Myslivicek, Jakub Renja, Johann Brentner and František Brixy. That's at the programme's new regular time of 2 o'clock next Sunday afternoon. Meanwhile, don't forget you can download today's programme and many previous editions of the Early Music Show from the BBC Radio 3 website. Well, next this afternoon, another programme with a new regular time, Choral Evensong. That's at 3 o'clock and it's followed at 4 by The Choir, presented this week by Mary King. One of Domenico Scarlatti's greatest contemporary admirers was the Englishman Charles Avison, born in Newcastle-upon-Tyne in 1709. Avison famously adapted some of Scarlatti's keyboard sonatas into a series of concerti grossi, but he did produce several sets that were, as they say, all his own work. Here's a movement from one of them. Pavlo Besnyuziuk leads the Avison Ensemble. The last movement of Charles Avison's Concerto Grosso, Opus 10, No. 2 in F major. Pavlo Besnyuziuk was leading the Avison Ensemble. Now, just before today's Choral Evensong, a look ahead to 4 o'clock this afternoon.
This week on The Choir, it's all about the balance of power. And I'm not talking politics. The balance in this case rests between text and music. Join me, Mary King, to find out how choral music is helping scientific research and enjoy a masterclass in creating the perfect synthesis between words and music, delivered by composers ranging from Bird and Tallis to 20th century masters Giorgi Ligeti and centenary birthday boy Benjamin Britten. That's all in The Choir, straight after Choral Evensong at 4 p.m. today.
And that'll be followed at 5:30 by Words and Music on the theme of mermaids. This is BBC Radio 3, now a little after 3 o'clock, and at its new regular time on a Sunday afternoon, Choral Evensong. Today's service was first broadcast live from Wakefield Cathedral last Wednesday. The canticles in B-flat are by Edgar Day, who from 1912 was assistant organist at Worcester Cathedral for half a century. And the anthem by William Harris is Fair as the Heaven, a setting of words taken from Edmund Spenser's poem A Hymn of Heavenly Beauty. The service opens now with Factum est Silentium by Richard Deering, first published in his 1618 Cantica Sacra. There was silence in heaven as the dragon joined battle with the archangel Michael.
Welcome to Evensong at Wakefield Cathedral, to those of you present or listening elsewhere. For many of our visitors, this may be your first experience of our renewed nave, in which case we hope you will appreciate the lively new acoustic, as well as the significant practical and aesthetic improvements to our surroundings. In anticipation of our celebration of Michaelmas, we sing the hymn, Christ, the Fair Glory of the Holy Angels.